Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
You live in Cincinnati. They do know that, that medical school is a great one, right?
They do. So it has a tremendous reputation. And, you know, I mean, again, just everybody, we're so thankful that it worked out as well as it did. And, yeah, I mean, it's shown a positive light on the University of Cincinnati Medical School, that's for sure.
It's really good. Well, thank you. Later in the show, we'll try to play I Have a Piano, which is what you're best known for.
I have a piano.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
We have passed the threshold on Sunrise. I just wanted to tell people that. For a while, it was at 727 in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
Which is the latest sunrise of the year. Today, we went to 726. We've turned the corner on sunrise. Sunset.
Yeah, how are we doing on the back end?
Sunset has been getting longer and longer and longer since December 21st. I know I obsess about this. I know I do. I just wanted to tell you that we have turned the corner on sunrise. Feel pretty good.
I just wanted to
that.
Say a quick shout out and a thank you to Josh Bickle, the Cincinnati-based photographer who took the photo that Anthony Beeson was talking
works
about.
Works for AP.
Yes.
Right?
Oh, yep. That's fantastic.
He freelance, but this was for AP on assignment. So thank you. And Anthony Beeson, check your email.
Okay, that's great.
It's outstanding.
I have to tell you a story about Chessie, a small story about Chessie. I think I've told this to Michael, but I haven't told it on the air. She is not bothered by police sirens. But when she hears an ambulance, there's a specific, and I don't know if the sound of an ambulance is the same outside of Washington, D.C. I don't know that. When she hears the sound of an ambulance, she stops still. Now, it has to be within visual sight of Chessie.
Okay.
She has to see the lights. She has to see the car go by. But she stands still and she begins to sing. And it's not a howl. It's not like when dogs howl at the moon. It's not anger. It's not anything. It's a specific kind of programming, a wiring that she has that is so weird. And she looks at the ambulance and she goes, "Oh," like that. It is in the pitch is exactly the same for 15 or 20 seconds. And if the ambulance is still there and she draws another breath one more time, it's, oh.
Your ability to mimic your dog.
Like that. It's not a howl.
Right.
She's singing.
She's joining
up a prayer.
I want to know this is the new game.
At first,
this is the new game. Does anybody else do this? Does anybody else's dog do this?
But now it seems like this is more visual in nature.
It's so wonderful. It's audio. It's mostly audio.
Is it possible that she was a lawyer in a previous life that chased
ambulances? An ambulance chaser. It's possible. But why?
But you capture the sound of the ambulance driving away.
Why
does she do that? But it seems like it is only triggered when she sees it.
Yeah, she has to see it. Why does she do that? If she hears it, she looks for it. If she doesn't see it, she doesn't make that.
But
she
again,
doesn't sing.
She is a herding dog, so she could be trying to just join that rescue.
It's just so wild to me.
That is.
I'm not mentioning the championship game. 40 will deal
Part
with
of the
that.
Paw Patrol.
It's terrible. It's actually terrible. I do want to. There's two things I want to get to. I guess I could get to Carlos Correa, but I'm happy for the Twins because it's an unlikely spot for Carlos Correa. When he went there last year, he went there getting an out every single year of his contract.
Yep.
Presumably there's no out this year. Michael and I were talking about whether or not this is good for baseball or bad for baseball, that it was a significantly shorter term but higher payout per year.
You know what I was thinking of? You're coming off of, you look at how the housing market has changed in the last 18 months with various rates, and you looked at what was happening in baseball with these contracts that were creeping up and up and up, and you'd say, okay, I'm willing to overpay for this house if it avoids getting into the bidding war with six other competitors. And you look at, I'm willing to give you the extra 3 or 4 years on the back end. And then rates change, and all of a sudden, houses are sitting on the market a little bit longer. There was none of that sitting here. But you looked at that period over Christmas, and you're like, "How is this still going on this long?" I mean, given what Cohen was saying, this is the final piece that takes us over the top.
There is mystery to this that is as yet unreported. For example, Ime Udoka. There is mystery to that still.
Yeah.
That is as yet unreported. Steve Cohen spends a lot of money and was really excited to swoop in and take him from the Giants, and then found out something on the physical, as the Giants did, that caused them to hiccup a little bit and move backwards. 3 weeks went by without a signing, without a comment. Nobody said anything publicly. Well, it turns out he's got a metal plate in his leg. And maybe that was the straw for the Giants. Maybe they don't want to give somebody 12 or 13 years, as both teams offered, 12 or 13 years, because their doctors say that's going to disintegrate, that's going to be bad. But the Twins had him for a year, and he didn't miss any games. He never went into the training room, and they loved him. So they gave him 6, thinking if we get 4, it's okay, because he's a great player. But there's a mystery surrounding this that it's unsatisfactory the way this has ended to me, just to me. I went shopping yesterday. I went to the Safeway yesterday. I went into the ice cream aisle. I was going to go for Tillamook, but something caught my eye. Häagen-Dazs used to be about $3.50 per pint.
Yeah, or like 2 for $6 often with your number.
Yeah. And then it went up to 7, and then it went up to 8, you know, for 2 or whatever it is. Now it's sitting over $5 per. Häagen-Dazs. I don't know why this is.
And this is for their small pint that's single use effectively.
Yeah, that's right. I don't know why this is. I don't want to know that the pandemic has changed the way ice cream is made or changed cows in some way that they're not giving me. This is nonsense. It's just a company taking advantage of other people raising their rates. Okay. I accept that. It annoys me, but I accept it.
Look up the term shrinkflation.
I go into the Safeway, and I go to the Häagen-Dazs. And not only for the good flavors is it 2 for $8, which
okay.
I think is pretty good.
Sure.
But they have discontinued brands that they are offering. Now, the expiration date on ice cream is years. It's years.
Yeah,
it's
basically forever.
They have discontinued brands that they're offering for $2.94.
Yeah, nothing wrong with dairy here.
$2.94 for Häagen-Dazs. Under $3 for Häagen-Dazs. And I got 2 dark Belgian chocolate chips. A discontinued
I'm surprised
flavor.
That's discontinued. Or is it so just out of
know.
Season?
I didn't know that ice cream was seasonal. Yeah. I didn't know that. I mean, I think some ice creams, like peach ice cream and strawberry ice cream, are seasonal in the sense that you see more of them in the summer.
Summertime,
because
sure.
there's more available yeah. fruit, even though they don't give you much fruit at all.
Yeah,
I pay full freight for Liz's coffee chip.
Coffee chip was there. It was 2 for $8
yeah.
at the Safeway.
Nice.
I stayed away from the 2 for $8. I just bought 2 for $2.94 each. Felt really good about that.
Now, did you try for some of that seafood salad you normally get?
Didn't get any of that. Discontinued brands. Discontinued.
What flavors?
They can't sell it if it's rotten. If
no.
it's got rat hair in it, they can't sell it.
No, but I did work at a grocer's at one point in my very career.
Grocery is different.
And
everything's supposed to be fresh there.
We would have salad dressing, and the expiration date was, say, I don't know, May 5th or whatever, you know. Smudge it out and say, what are you really allowed to do? He's like, what? If it's a couple of days over, it's going to kill you?
It's oil-based. It's fine.
Let me get to the big story.
It's very shady.
Michael, tell the people about my socks.
So normally, Dad and I like to check in during the morning on non-show days, and I get a very animated voicemail from you, which I still have not read. Now, your voicemails are actually just in the sounds of like one-minute sound bites that are old guy radio of old. And it's you're going full Monday Night Football. There's a clock in your mind, and you get out. So you realize that, I don't know, maybe your toe is sticking out of the front of your sock, and you need some new socks.
I need new socks.
So you're wondering, where can
gold
I go
toe.
To
when
pick
they, when you buy
gold
the gold toe,
toe socks?
That's
they. You think the gold toe is reinforced? I don't think so. I think it's got less material in it because I'm sticking my feet through it all the time.
Well, this lasted a good 2 years because this is from the package of socks that you purchased for me, I believe back in the spring of 2020 when I was looking for a new pair of socks myself.
And you didn't like the socks.
No, I threw these in the corner of my old bedroom.
So I used
which,
them.
Of course, went back to you.
I bought them.
So you asked where you could get these socks. And of course, I give you the option of same day shipping from Amazon. I show you a couple of different styles. And I'm assuming that you want what is a traditional comfort, you know, sport casual sock, the mid-calf. A crew sock goes up just past the middle, the calf. It stays in place. No. You want full coverage. You want this above the calf, shapeless.
Oh, right through. I'm
where
sorry,
you have
Nigel.
To, where, you
oh,
have yeah. to, where you have to create
I want tube
your
socks.
Own,
that is a, yeah.
You have to create your own space
I want
in this
tube
shapeless
socks
sock
that go
for your
over
ankle.
My calf. Yeah, I want iris socks, as we
yes.
used to call
so them. I mentioned to you that if you're going to Safeway or CVS, probably in the old person medicine aisle, there'd be some tube socks for you.
But you said
shapeless
you were
socks.
So upset that I wanted what I wanted. You just said, oh,
I was just confused. I've not seen these. It's like if you decided to wear a pair of sanitary socks from a baseball team in the
50s. Right.
So,
right.
You mean like this?
Yeah, well, not quite that high, but
those are hiking socks.
Well, no,
those are pretty high.
These are Tecovas. The Tecova socks, which are fantastic. I've got them because
I mean, I've worn those medicinal socks for swollen ankles.
When you wear an airplane.
Oh, sure, like compression socks?
Compression socks. Right. I wear them a lot when I wear actual shoes. I haven't worn shoes in a couple of years. I'm just wearing sneakers almost every day. But I like the unformed tube sock. And Michael had a reaction to it. Yeah, a reaction to it like, oh my God, how could anybody do that? Don't tell any of my friends that this
no,
is what
I'm telling all my friends.
You know.
The friends that I have.
You know. So
yeah, socks have gone
can you? But
short
you got them for me. Pack have, of three.
Yes.
And it's going to arrive tomorrow.
Who orders the pack of three? So here's what happened. I canceled that order because I was trying to get same day shipping or overnight for you. And if, you know, of course, it's if you meet a certain price threshold, which, I don't know, three pairs of socks was just shy of surprise.
Yeah, of course
surprise.
It was.
So we added some, you know, we're always looking for wipes and whatnot for the kids. So I believe after this show tapes, those tube socks will be waiting for you on my front steps.
Okay. So, but it was.
And I certainly won't take them from you.
I think that no it's fair for me to say that you reacted to what I wanted with disgust.
Yes.
With disgust.
Disgust.
Because it's not classy, it's not
no,
country clubby.
That's not at all. It's more just there's a shift in our relationship where you are now fully embracing and entering that Grandpa Tony role, and now I'm beginning to see you as Ira, and I'm about to fire up the car, drive 45 minutes to go pick up some spices with you.
Pumpkin spice. But cumin is what he used to go 45 miles to get cumin.
Just slap a 20 on the counter.
Not in any recipes at all. But I've also been wearing these socks for 100 years. I like these socks.
Yeah,
I'm just disappointed when I stick my toe through them about, you know, 1 month in.
Yeah, now that's poor design.
Yeah.
Gold I think toe. Gold toe socks, they've been around a while.
They've been
I think
around.
They figured out the toe box.
Yeah. So anyway, so that's, I've got that to look forward to, which is nice.
Just three pair.
It's okay. I've
barely
only got
gets
two
you through
feet.
The weekend.
Yeah. We'll see what happens. The dog is over with Michael now.
The dog's very animated this morning.
Well, I think maybe because she heard me imitate her singing. Oh.
Could
that
be
was
it.
Weird. That was weird.
Like
I will take
like.
A break. Is Chuck Todd next?
Chuck Todd is
Chuck
next.
Chuck Todd. When we return, I'm Tony Kornheiser.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is sent to us by Marcus Dowd, who writes, last time I wrote, you were kind enough to play my old friend's music, Solo Rio. So I returned for a second pass and a third time to declare that my place, the Idlewild Inn, be named the official TK show Bed and Breakfast. Look it up. I perform many a wedding here because, well, it's my place and my wife's. And thanks to my 27 seconds on the internet and that wonderful seminary, Universal Life Church, which you and I both attended. I didn't, but you did. Nigel did. I assert that the story behind this friend's connection to the show is quite something. Ed Hume is one of those multi-talented people who works hard without even trying, if you know what I mean. He worked a regular job for a long time and was only able to satisfy his creative impulses in his spare time, the first of which was making stringed instruments, especially mandolins. Somewhere along the way, he decided to learn how to play those instruments, and after finally retiring, he's produced his first album, released only a couple of weeks ago. This is a lovely song.
Isn't it?
By Ed Hume. It's called For Love. It plays in Chuck Todd. And Chuck Todd, of all people, because of his French horn background, would appreciate how hard it must be to make a stringed instrument like a mandolin, right? That must be so hard.
I wouldn't even begin to know, you know, how you pick your wood out, hollowing out the wood. Different woods would make different sounds.
Yes.
How
yes.
deep the hole is. I mean, think about all of those things that go into it. Feels like you need to be a good engineer, too.
Yeah, it's so much easier to interview Kevin McCarthy than to make a mandolin. It's just yeah. so
you
much.
You know, you think it'd be easy to interview Kevin McCarthy. He seems to have an allergy towards some of us. But
really? That's amazing. I don't know.
We can clear up that allergy.
Yeah, maybe it's because he appears to be the world's biggest loser at the moment, giving up every single thing he wanted from the office in order to get the office, knowing the price of everything and the value of nothing.
Isn't that how Mike McCarthy got his job at the Dallas Cowboys?
yeah.
Very much.
Wow. McCarthy thing, yeah.
Chuck had a rough week last week. We gave him the Buffalo game. That was always an optional game. It's in an if-win.
That was about the only one I could win.
Yeah, you were 3-5. So you're now under Mount 500 with the playoffs to come, though. So the playoffs maybe are a little bit easier to pick, I think, but I'm not sure. 61-62-2.
These games seem way too easy to pick, which means we're missing something.
It's probably true. That's probably true. Okay, so let's start. We're going to do these in order of the day of the week, the Saturday games, the Sunday games, the Monday night games. ESPN got really lucky on this Monday night game. They're going to get the highest
That's
number of the
gonna
year.
That's going to be a fun one,
Highest number of the year.
I hear it wasn't luck. I mean, I hear that was part of the deal. Like, they paid for the first pick.
For the first Monday night?
This was part of their, like, they were desperate to have something special. They were tired of having the worst game. Didn't they used to get the worst game?
Yes, no. But if you get the 5-4, which they got, that is the worst game. And yet, because it's Dallas and Brady, it Branding becomes wise. The best game.
Yeah.
It does.
Yeah.
All right, we'll
it's
start.
The best game for TV and Stephen A, I guess.
Let's start with the Saturday game. Seattle is at San Francisco. San Francisco has won 10 games in a row. Seattle played its way in. Seattle is +9.5. They are in the same division, so they're used to each other. That may cut down the differential here, even if you like San Francisco. But Seattle gets 9.5. Who you got?
I'm curious. Do you think this is the biggest spread of the three teams San Francisco was going to play? Detroit and Green Bay, do you think that would have been slightly narrower?
I don't think with Detroit they would have been slightly narrower. I don't, because Detroit is mostly an offensive team and San Francisco's got the best defense. So I don't.
Yeah. The only thing that scares me about Seattle is what you just mentioned. Same division.
Yep. Know each other.
And Pete Carroll does seem to, but this seems so lopsided.
Yep.
Seattle just seems so outmanned. And the playoffs always feel like they expose the only concern I have is Brock Purdy's first playoff game.
Right.
Like we're sort of blowing past that as if, oh, Kyle Shanahan's got this. You know, it doesn't matter. But I'll take San Francisco just because I think if you take an underdog, you have to believe they can win the game. And I just don't believe Seattle can win this game.
All right. Well, you took the Giants last week. You took an underdog. You didn't believe
you know, that
won.
Whole everything about last week, I my only excuse is, I didn't fully appreciate who was playing and who wasn't by Wednesday. I think within 2 hours, I saw Justin Fields wasn't playing. I was like, oh, no. This whole thing is whiffed. Like, I was like, just throw those picks away.
Yeah.
Anyway. Next game. Los Angeles Chargers, with a great young quarterback and perhaps a new coach next year to tutor that young quarterback, are at the Jacksonville Jaguars. Jacksonville is probably the biggest surprise to make the playoffs, given what their record was last year. We're all happy for Jacksonville, but it is a surprise. They've got a great young quarterback as well. This was Pick'em yesterday. It's already gone up to Chargers -1.5. When Nigel sent me the list and I saw Pick'em, I said, really? The Chargers are a significantly better team than Jacksonville. So I was a little bit surprised. Now at least it's 1.5. Who you got?
You think this guy's coaching for his job?
I do. Well, Wilbon insists he is. I'm not sure. He made the playoffs. I think that's enough. But he's a wild man on fourth downs. He's a wild man, so, you know.
Peterson will be, too. I mean, this will be a game with a few punts, because both these coaches are like to go for it.
Yep.
I the Chargers are the one team here. If you said, hey, who's the one team that could win three on the road and suddenly end up in the Super Bowl? The Chargers are one of those teams in my head. So I like them a lot. So give me them, but the winner here, the loser quarterback here, becomes sort of, right, they automatically drop down to the second tier of young quarterbacks?
I don't know. I think they're both real good.
It feels like the one who wins here will be seen as, oh, yeah, look what this guy can do.
Well, that's what happened
to
Burrow.
The one that loses becomes, oh, I don't know, maybe he needs a little more time. Like,
Overreaction Monday. All right,
yeah.
Next game. The team of your youth, Miami, was getting 10.5 at Buffalo. And overnight, it went down to 9 at Buffalo. Somebody must like Miami. Miami went and played Buffalo very, very well just a few weeks ago in Buffalo when it was colder than it is going to be this weekend. Maybe it went to 9 because they said Tua was going to play. I don't know that. I don't think if Tua doesn't play, and maybe even if he does, I don't think Miami can win a playoff game. So this is strictly points. Buffalo hasn't covered all. Buffalo and Kansas City haven't covered all that much. Although in this particular case, I sort of like Buffalo. I think Miami played its best game in Buffalo already. But if you want the 9, it's yours.
There's no way Tua plays, right? The NFL.
I wouldn't think.
If the NFL wouldn't. I mean, I'm not saying that the NFL is going to like it. Have some hidden hand with Steven Ross or whatever. Don't you play Tua? But good grief! I mean, I don't want to watch him play. You'll be cringing every time he drops back to pass.
He's in the wrong business. I said this the other day on television. He doesn't just get hurt often. He gets hurt badly. These are not broken fingers. They're not.
Yeah.
He's just in the wrong profession.
No, and I'll be honest. It's hard to watch. It's hard to watch. Look, I think Teddy Bridgewater would give him certainly better than Skylar Thompson, I think was that the guy's name? I hope
Skylar,
I got that name
somebody
right.
Or other.
I keep wanting to call him Bryce Thompson or Skylar. I don't know, one of those millennial names. Give me Buffalo. Same reasoning. And I know it's a lot of points. It's a divisional game, but I mean, no, I think Buffalo, I don't want to be betting against them yet.
Okay.
Put it that way. I think emotion matters.
The New York Giants are at Minnesota. If there was any one team in the playoffs where you'd say they're just not any good, that would be Tampa Bay. They're just not any good. They may beat Dallas. They're just not any good. But if there was any team that had done well all year where you said, I'm not betting on them, that would be Minnesota. I don't know that you want to bet on the Giants. But the Giants get 3 at Minnesota.
This is the most popular underdog pick. This is sort of the trendy underdog pick. Everybody's picking Giants. Oh,
right?
Giants are going to beat the Vikings because of everything you just said.
Yep.
And I'll take, who's the better coach? Certainly looks like it's this Daboll guy.
Daboll is pretty good.
And which team has the better defense? Looks like the Giants have the better defense. And in a playoff game, that all seems to matter. What, 2.5 or 3?
3 is what I've got.
3. To me, that's what the game will be. So I'll take the Giants plus the 3. I'd rather have the points than not.
Of all the things that won't surprise me in this game, Minnesota winning by 30 is the one that won't surprise me the most. It won't. Because they're due for one good game. But we'll see. We'll see. Here we go. Baltimore is at Cincinnati. They are rivals. This game could have been a coin flip game, except Baltimore lost the other day when Cincinnati won. This is a division game. Baltimore is getting 7.5. I do not know at 8:30 in the morning on Wednesday. I don't know the status of Lamar Jackson. I don't think anybody knows the status of Lamar Jackson other than he ought to hire an agent. That's what he ought to do. That ought to be his status. They are a far, far, far better team with Lamar Jackson. They don't score at all without Lamar Jackson, but their defense, and this may surprise people, because they used to be great on defense, and then they weren't for a couple of years. Their defense ranks 3rd in the entire NFL in points allowed. So they can hold you down, I think. 7.5, who you got?
Do you, this idea that somehow Lamar could show up at practice today and they'd be ready with Lamar, do you buy that?
I actually do, because all their other quarterbacks, they run the same offense They don't change anything.
Right.
So I do buy that. That doesn't mean I buy that he's ready to go. And also, I wonder, and I do wonder this, he's got a contract negotiation right in front of him. He bet on himself. He may not want to go out there and have a bad game. That would hurt him.
Well,
I don't know.
That's the thing that I've been trying to figure out. On one hand, playing, he needs to play perhaps to improve his contract status. On the other hand, a bad game would be a problem.
Yep.
So I assume it means he doesn't play. And Cincinnati seemed like they had a little edge to them in that Baltimore game. You know, it's really tempting. There are going to be a lot of three-way bets of Cincinnati, Buffalo, San Francisco. Just bet the three of them to win.
Right.
And I keep thinking about that and which teams of those three, which team is most likely to get upset. And it's this one, right? It's the Ravens. Like,
yes, it is.
What's the improbable upset? Will somehow win a game that's 17-16 and you have no idea how they got the 17 points. So give me the Ravens and the points. That hook, the hook.
7.5 is what you get. It went up from 6. Yeah. It's a good number. And the last game is the game that everyone in America will watch, because everybody watches Dallas anyway, and everybody watches Tom Brady. It's Dallas at Tampa Bay. Dallas could not come into the playoffs on a worse note. They were so awful against Washington. Dak Prescott was so awful against Washington. He has had pick sixes in 3 of his last 4 games. He has had 15 interceptions in 12 games. He has gone 7 straight games with at least 1 interception. This is not a small sample size. Dak Prescott got paid $1 billion and started out taking over for Cooper Rush, and they look great, and they don't look great right now. Tampa Bay is a bad football team. But if Tom Brady's close in the fourth, he wins. It's remarkable. There's a point in the game where somehow he drinks the blood of some animal and he becomes Tom Brady again for 15 minutes or less. But it doesn't matter because he wins the game.
I think it's a German lab in somewhere that he gets these.
It's unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Somewhere in Europe.
-2.5. Dallas is a 2.5 point road favorite. Who you got?
What does ESPN daytime programming want? A Dallas loss, right? Like, that becomes the biggest story of the week next week.
Yes.
Dallas loses.
Yes.
Become about McCarthy, a Jerry Jones. Is someone going to remind in daytime that there's teams that won games and that actually the playoffs will continue? But if Dallas loses, it feels like it would be just a massive earthquake in Jones's head.
If Dallas loses this game, like you asked me about Brandon Staley, if Dallas loses this game, I can't imagine Mike McCarthy surviving it, and I can't imagine Jerry Jones not calling Sean Payton personally. That doesn't mean he'll take it, because he may not want Dak Prescott.
How often did he not fire Jason Garrett? That's the only
years and years and years and years. You're right. I said that yesterday. He screams, but then he doesn't actually pull the trigger.
I will be honest, for the pure car wreck gawking perspective, I hope Dallas loses.
Right.
Because the whole watching Jerry Jones lose it and all of that, and McCarthy, as a fan of watching Dallas lose, that would be nice. I just don't believe it. This is a terrible coaching matchup, by the way. I don't know if anybody's keeping track of that either. These are two guys that I'm not convinced get it right when your clock needs managing and all of that stuff. It's 2.5, right?
2.5.
I think Dallas finds a way to win. It'll be ugly. There'll be some moment where Brady has it, you know.
You know, Brady's never lost to Dallas in his career. He's 7-0.
And what is it about outdoor grass? I heard some excuse about that.
Grass.
And Dallas and
grass.
And,
they're
and
slowed
grass.
Down on actual grass. That people cling to every idiotic analytic possible.
It's got to be the grass. That's the explanation. If it wasn't for the grass, Dak would be in the Hall of Fame already.
So you'll take Dallas?
Yeah, I'll take Dallas.
Okay.
Because what I want to happen, I know won't happen, which is Dallas losing it and Jerry losing his mind.
Thank you, Chuck.
All right, guys.
Chuck
Bye.
Todd, boys and girls. Always a pleasure to have him. If we just gave you Chuck Talk, it'd be enough. Unless he's the host of Meet the Press. But we do more. we give you a monkey.
See the monkey, he's scritch, scritch, scratching, watching his iPad, smoking and laughing, hanging with Bud Grant, tap, tap, tapping on his purple
attaché. Sing along, everybody.
Nigel's going to the zoo,
zoo, zoo, zoo.
Reginald's got the bites by two. Sometimes he throws
poo, poo, poo.
And he's had too much Johnny Walker Blue.
So
I went down to the National Zoo yesterday, and Reginald was busy hosting a party for the new members of the House and the Senate.
Yeah, like, George Santos, was he there?
He was actually, that's funny you said that, he was actually speaking to George Santos. Santos was talking about the time he stormed Normandy Beach,
of course,
which was fantastic. He also, when he saw me, he said, well, you may not know this about me, I was a board op for the Tony Kornheiser Show years ago, and wanted me to remind you that, yes, he is Jewish. I'm sorry, he's Jewish, not Jewish.
He's ish. There's a lot of ish.
So,
since Ish Smith, he's the new Ish Smith.
Yes, he is. So once I'd gotten that out of the way, I cornered Reginald. We went over some of these matches. And the first one he gave him was Jacksonville at home, getting 1.5 from the Chargers. I want to say San Diego.
But everybody says
the Chargers. And he showed me a video of clips of him eating at every single Waffle House in Jacksonville. It's about 432. So that tells me he likes the area, and he will take the Jaguars in that match. Now, the next one we gave him was Minnesota at home, giving 3 to the Giants. And
he's going with the Vikes by 2.
Showed me performing in the Ice Capades with Chuck Foreman, Anthony Carter, and yes, Bud Grant, who, by the way, skates in shorts and no shirt whatsoever.
Of course he does.
It's very impressive. Now, the last match we gave him was Cincinnati at home, giving 7.5 to the Ravens. And he showed me a photograph of him at a golf course. I think it must have been Otis Saga. Johnny Bench was there. Cesar Geronimo.
Yeah. That's the golf course. It's called the Leather Stocking Golf Course.
Is that what it is?
Yes.
Right off Lake Otsego.
Yeah.
Cool 18th tee.
Yeah. So he's taking Cincinnati?
I think he's going to take the Bengals. Yes.
So he's taking 3 home teams. Chuck took 4 road teams. I didn't want to bring that up to Chuck because he would have had a conniption. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, Pat 40, and we'll go back into that debacle on Monday night. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
In celebration of opening day, we've got a special episode of the Moth Podcast for you. The theme is baseball and the surprising ways it connects people.
I gaze out at the players on the field, and then I look over at my dad, and I realize that in the silence between us that something has changed. It's like I'm seeing him for the first time.
2 stories about baseball, family, and so much more. The episode's available right now. Subscribe to the Moth Podcast to make sure you hear it.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Once again, this is Ed Hume, and once again I read from Marcus Dowd. Upon hearing the songs, I told him about the success I'd found submitting another friend's songs to this lousy show. I asked him if he'd ever heard of Tony Kornheiser, but Ed's not a sports guy, so I told him we had an interesting connection with the show because a guy who worked the board long ago went on to make the shows that another common friend of ours, John, had done the art design for. Greg Garcia, Ed asked. I believe he still has a painting of mine hanging in his office. It's of a couple of characters from one of his first shows, My Name is Earl. That's right, Ed's a painter too. And though he had never met Mr. Garcia, John, who worked on many Garcia shows, and Greg will respond to this today, 100%. Had delivered the painting to his boss, and last Ed heard, it was still hanging in Greg's office. Lastly, and I think this is another good one, a couple of weeks ago in PTI, Wilbon tried to remember an old quote by saying something along the lines of, it ain't bragging if you can back it up, which isn't quite right. Neither of you tried to credit the aphorism. Might I refer you to the brilliant Dan Byrne album of many years ago, 50 Eggs, and a song called Tiger Woods. In that song, the lyrics, it ain't bragging if it's true. Muhammad Ali said that back when he was Cassius Clay. On that album are nothing but gems, some sports related, like an ode to Monica Seles, among others. We get off the subject. This song is called Monroe Station Blues. It's by Ed Hume. And Michael, if people like Ed Hume or friends of Ed Hume want to submit their songs, how do they do it?
Send us your music by emailing it to jingles@tonykornheisershow.com.
And that plays in Pat 40, who had the great line last week when I asked him, would Stetson Bennett IV get into the pros? And he said, no, he'll never spend a dime for dinner in his life in Georgia, and he'll open up Stetson Bennett Chevy. That game was brutal. You had to be there. I could at least go to sleep at halftime. You had to be there. What was that like?
Still better for me than those in the stands who were getting rained on in a covered stadium. Weather was really bad by L.A. standards, and it was pouring rain, and this is, you know, there are no sides, basically, to this stadium, so it was coming in on everybody. For me, no, it was just crushingly boring watching the game and then trying to write about it. But, you know, the old sports writer saying if it's over early, that at least gives us more time to write. So we did have that. But, I mean, it was a bad mismatch that was inevitable, like evident from the absolute beginning. It reminded me a lot of the Alabama-Notre Dame game a decade earlier where it's like one possession each team, and you're like, all right, we're done here. We got nothing in terms of a competitive game.
The only question I had, and I did not watch the second half, and I consulted the box score, and Georgia had 44 rushes, which is really a lot, and only 25 passes, and I figured most of those passes were probably in the first half. But did they run it up?
No. Well, I didn't watch much of the fourth quarter. After they took Stetson Bennett out, I just put my head down and started writing.
Yeah, right.
To the best of my recollection, no. No, they did not. I mean, they, you know, backup quarterback really didn't do much. You know, they took Stetson out with 13 minutes to play. I think there was maybe a late turnover that helped give them good field position to score. And, I mean, they were just so superior to TCU across the board that you didn't even have to try that hard to score. It's funny, afterwards, Kirby Smart credited his scout team defense, the backups, for learning TCU's defense. And as he put it, he said, we wanted them to give us a better look than TCU was going to give us. And he was right, because if you look at the backups that Georgia's got, they're all four-star and five-star recruits. And so you got great players out there to go against. And their backups were better than TCU's starters in a lot of instances.
Did Sonny Dykes say anything afterwards that was interesting in terms of run it up or being outclassed or this, that, or the other thing?
No, I mean, he had not. He said it snowballed on us, you know. And, you know, I think there was an acknowledgement that it was going to be a big uphill climb no matter what. And, you know, when it started badly, things just absolutely got away from him. And whether it was the size of the stage, the brightness of the lights, or just the fact that Georgia was superior to them physically at the line of scrimmage and on the perimeters as well. You know, I think probably all those things combined to make this just a nightmare.
So we had a question yesterday on PTI, which is, what does this say about college football? And Wilbon always takes the following position. It doesn't say anything about anything. It's just one game. There'll be a championship next year. It doesn't say anything. And I took a different position. I said it was bad for college football because it proved without a shadow of a doubt that the SEC first and the Big Ten second are the only conferences that matter. And I said that once you get in, and I know, Pat, you like the 12-team playoff, but once you get into the 12-team playoff and you get down to 6 or 8, I'm not going to be surprised if it's all SEC and Big Ten, especially with the addition of Texas and Oklahoma and the addition of USC and UCLA. Feel free to refute me, but I thought this was bad for college football.
Well, I can take a little bit from both of you guys. I mean, sometimes there's just a matchup in a championship game that goes awry. Well, I mean, remember there was a run of Super Bowl blowouts that was just ungodly, and not as bad as 65-7.
Oof.
But as a Bronco fan, I remember many blowouts in the Super Bowl. So sometimes that just happens. To the bigger picture, I mean, yeah, your point that those two leagues are outstripping everyone else is valid and going to get worse, because that's where the money is going to be, and that's where the imperative to be good at football is. You know, you can have a Clemson, which had a run, and I think the run's probably over. I mean, they're going to have good teams. Maybe every once in a while they can pop a semifinal team in a playoff or something like that. Florida State's coming back. You know, the TCU's / Baylor's of the world could have a great year. Somebody from the Pac-12 could jump up. But more often than not, it's going to be an SEC team and a couple of Big Ten teams, you know, several SEC teams and a couple of Big Ten teams at the top of the heap. And the way the revenue distribution is going, I don't see anything that changes that. It'll really only just exacerbate it.
So you bring a perspective to this. One of the best teams I ever saw was the Joe Burrow LSU team. I mean, they killed people. I mean, the amount of points they scored was really something. Georgia's won two in a row, though. Georgia went 15-0 this year after 15 players were drafted. That's just unbelievable. How good, Pat, is Georgia?
Incredible. I mean, to your point, probably neither this team nor last year's team were as spectacular as that one LSU team, but this is 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
And, I mean, to go 15-0 after losing 15 players, five first-round draft picks on defense alone.
It's unbelievable.
I mean, it's staggering. It really is. Their life passed before their eyes against Ohio State. Ohio State had the chance to beat them.
Yep.
But to a man, it was amazing how many Georgia people were just disgusted with their performance in that game. It was like they knew they did not play anywhere near their best. We saw them at their best against TCU, and that's what it looks like when you have to play Georgia. That's what they did to Oregon. That's what they did to Tennessee during the season. They were an incredible dominant force. And, you know, to do it 2 years in a row, 29 out of 30 in an era where players leave school early and then there are where players transfer a lot. Wow. And, like, let's start with them number one for next year, too, because until proven otherwise, I think they're the team to beat.
I think I'm right on this, but I could be wrong. I don't know that there are crossover games in the SEC, and if there are not, then it seems to me the only game they have to worry about is whether LSU or Alabama gets them in the SEC championship, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, next year, their schedule is really easy. Mm-hmm. I think they had a game scheduled against Oklahoma, and the SEC basically had them unschedule it once Oklahoma was coming into the league.
Right.
So, that's replaced with a cupcake. And so their crossover games are neither LSU nor Alabama. I can't remember who they are, but it's not the top of the heap. So you look at Georgia's schedule, and I don't see any challenges there. We'll see. They've got to go to Knoxville, but other than that, it sets up very well for them.
How do you know? Nick Saban shows up at the game, and he sits down with ESPN, and he has the gall to wear that Aflac blue blazer. I mean, God, I wanted to just rip that off his body if I could have. But how do you think he feels looking at Georgia?
Like he's looking at his own program in 2011 and 12.
Yeah, yeah.
Like they've got it rolling at such a high level. They've got every box checked. They're superbly coached by a guy who was his protege. They're sitting on an unbelievable gold mine of local talent. You know, I think he's got to look and say, I hope we can beat them sometime, but I don't know. You know, that I think that there's a chance that Alabama's window is closed. If that's the case, then good Lord, who's going to stand up to Georgia?
Is Kirby Smart that good, or is he lucky because he's recruited well and he knows he's got a plan that works?
I think he's become that good. I used to think he was not very good in games. He gets pretty wound up, and I think he sometimes has made some bad decisions or his team has lost composure in big games, but I don't see that anymore. I think the last couple of years, I used to say that you could count on one game a year where his team would absolutely melt down, and I don't think that's the case anymore. I think he's figured it out. He's very smart. He has a real personal one-on-one charisma that really helps him in recruiting. He's able to connect with young people, and here's the scary thing: he's 47 years old. I mean, if he doesn't get bored and he stays in good health and he doesn't want to go to the NFL, we're looking at the rest of the 2020s and 2030s with Kirby at Georgia.
Well, it's what we did with Saban, you know, at Alabama. The one question mark, I guess, as Stetson Bennett rides off into the Chevy dealership and then joins AARP next week, they need a quarterback. Do they have a quarterback?
Yeah, they like their backups. Carson Beck, Brock Vandergrift, those guys were super highly recruited, four-star, five-star guys that just quite frankly, you know, they were not going to get ahead of Stetson, not after last year when Stetson proved what he could do. Right. And, you know, they'll get their chance. And, again, this is another thing with that easy schedule. They've got a time to kind of ease in with that new quarterback and let him develop and figure some things out. Are they going to have a guy who's the offensive MVP of four straight playoff games? Probably not, but, you know, they don't need a superstar quarterback probably next year to be extremely good.
And you don't think they go into the transfer portal? You think they like what they've got?
Probably. You know, they haven't been real big shoppers in the portal. They've got a couple receivers coming in for next year, big-time SEC receivers. But I think they're willing to roll with the quarterbacks they have at this point.
Okay. Plug your podcast for us.
Yo, happy to do so. College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel, Ross Dellinger. It's college football, but it's also a bunch of Falderall and all the big college issues of the time. We're actually in San Antonio for the NCAA convention right now, and my daughter's here because she's a finalist for NCAA Woman of the Year. So I'll tell her you said hello.
Oh, please do, and wow. Wish her all the luck in the world. So she's back from South America for a while.
Briefly, yes. She got away from where they're trying to overthrow the government in Peru. And she's here for like 3 days.
Well, she's a college kid. Let her join in that. That's what we all did. Let's overthrow the government today, kids. Thank you, Pat.
Thank you, Tony.
Pat Forty, boys and girls. We'll take a break. We have email and jingle. When we return, I'm Tony Kornheiser.
I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua, and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk.
No.
You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter, and he said, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film, and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Here comes Tony's mailbag, got email, faxes, and you know. Here comes Tony's mailbag, gonna read some for all of you folks.
Banjo playing by Eric DeLong and the Slappy Boys. I love that name, the Slappy Boys. Just love that. Najee, you want to do the Bethesda Bagel ad for us?
Yes, Bethesda Bagels. We love them. You will as well. Just go to BethesdaBagels.com for the location in the D.C. area nearest you. Then pop on in and you'll be thrilled.
That's it for us. Before we get to the mailbag, let me just say everywhere I hear the sound of march and charge and feet, boy, because summer's here and the time is right for fighting in the streets, boy. Well, now what can a poor boy do except to sing for a rock and roll band? Because in sleepy London town, there's just no place for a street fighting man. That's Mick Jagger, Michael Philip Jagger, for whom my son is named. Sort of, kind of.
Kind of.
Thanks to our guests today, Chuck Todd and Pat Forty. Thanks as well to today's sponsor, ZipRecruiter and MeUndies. Michael did a great read. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Odyssey. Get the show through Apple Podcasts. Please leave us a review.
It's time to treat yourself. TK Nerve gets you a nice little discount of Johnny O. Try
Nerve.
The cashmere.
Yeah.
TK Nerve.
Pinch Nerve right down my back. Their cashmere is great.
Yeah.
Those sweaters are great.
Another couple cold weeks.
We have a Dan Byrne email, which is fabulous. Dear guys, dear fellows, if the Cigna and FedEx problems persist, once after getting hit by a car pulling out of a parking space, admittedly their fault, Geico offered me 25%. I wrote a song out called F Geico and sent it to them, advising them that as a world-famous singer, I'd soon be playing it at my shows. A week later, I got a check for the full amount. Happy to help should the need arise. Dan Byrne. P.S. I'll be opening for Roger Daltrey in Clearwater, Florida on February 11th. Shouts of La Cheeserie could bring a chorus of Victor Wembanyama. How fabulous is that?
He will be playing at Jammin' Java on...
Next week, right?
The 20th. Yeah, the 20th of January.
So today's the 11th.
Yeah.
So that's next weekend.
Tomorrow's the 12th. Yes.
Yes, and the 13th follows that, I believe. From Stan Longoffer. This is going to take a while. Stan Longoffer in Wichita, Kansas. Listening to your discussion about Glengarry Glen Ross prompted me to ask the woman to whom I'm related by marriage to list the best American plays. Dr. Julie Longhofer earned a PhD in dramatic literature and history from the University of Illinois. She's the smartest person I've ever known. According to Mrs. Dr. L, on the list of the best American plays in no particular order, Long Day's Journey Into Night, Eugene O'Neill, which I have always said is great as is the Iceman cometh. You know, either of them, fine. All My Sons by Arthur Miller. Streetcar Named Desire by Tennessee Williams, not to be confused with the musical Streetcar portrayed on an episode of The Simpsons. Any of the Century Plays by August Wilson, Fences if you must pick one. Our Town by Thornton Wilder and Buried Child by Sam Shepard. I am more familiar with Sam Shepard's acting work. I know he was a great playwright. Yes. I do not know his plays. This does not have the Arthur Miller play that I would have, Death of a Salesman, number one. When you list All My Sons by Arthur Miller instead, and there's other plays, you could list The Crucible
sure.
by Arthur Miller as well. When you do that to me, it's sort of a humble brag. Just sort of a humble brag. You show me how smart you are, how good you are. Death of a Salesman to me is number one. Michael, you've read
Attention
a lot.
Attention must be paid.
Yeah, you've read a lot of plays.
Yeah, but the experience for me is many of these I've not seen the production of it. You read it, and that's a different experience.
Yes, oh, absolutely. The acting brings so much more to it. But plays are written to be acted.
Yes.
They're written to be acted. She also said many would include an Edward Albee play on this list, but me, not so much. So, you know, she's not all highbrow. Her favorite guilty pleasure show is Bat Out of Hell, the musical, which she plans to see again when we go to London for our theater fix this March. Assuming it's not already filled, I would like to nominate Dr. Julie Longhofer as the official dramaturg of the Tony Kornheiser Show, which is done. And anybody that throws Steinman into the mix, I love them as a result of having done that. I just love them. From Jeff Osterman in Losby, Maryland, my contribution to What My Dog Ate game. I had two lab retriever mixes as a kid that ate the mud flaps off my parents' car. They also drank a quart of maple oil. Thankfully, not at the same time. Neither fazed them one bit. I've been listening for 15 years. I never wrote in until the birthday number game from a couple of weeks ago. Apparently, birthday numbers and what my dog ate are the topics in my wheelhouse. From Mike Roseberry in State College, Pennsylvania. Dear soon-to-be Ingleside resident, the reading of Sunrise Sunset Times made for riveting content. Could you please give us a heads up as to when the discussion of favorite soups is going to occur? Because I really don't want to miss that. Good night. Good luck on bingo night. And watch out, Mrs. Lieberman cheats. Great. Just great. From Pete Effinger in Akron, Ohio. It is said we stand on the shoulders of giants. Man's study of the solar system goes back to the ancient Incans, Egyptians, and the builders of Stonehenge. Our modern understanding of the sun and the planets can be traced back to ancient Greek philosophers as early as 500 BC. In the 16th century, astronomers Kepler and Copernicus mathematically described the elegant motion of heavenly bodies. And in the 17th century, some guy named Galileo risked his life facing heresy charges in front of the Inquisition in support of their modern heliocentric model of our solar system. But not until Nigel's research of sunrise and sunsets in the Washington, D.C. area over the past 12 days had we dotted all the I's and crossed all the T's in this century's long pursuit of knowledge. Kepler, Copernicus, Galileo, Nigel. That's the list. From Bill Garner in North Potomac, Maryland. My dad used to take us to Hojo in Williamsburg. I'd always get an ice cream cone with chocolate almond, chocolate with whole almonds. My record for one scoop was 16 almonds. I thought you'd like to know. From Teresa LaHaye in Springfield, Missouri. Tony Beeson's news about the closure of the last Howard Johnson's brought me back to the Hojo days of my youth. I was the oldest of six children of two hardworking parents in Little Rock who could give us what we needed but few extras. We never went on family vacations, but at least once a year we spent the weekend at a Howard Johnson's in adjoining rooms. My three sisters and I had our own room, two double beds, our own bathroom, all those clean folded white towels, air conditioning, the pool right outside the door. My parents shared a room with my brother and baby sister. We'd check in on a Friday night and eat dinner in the restaurant. The ice cream was a special treat, though the advertised special was always the fried clams. Oh, sure, it's always fried clams. Always fried clams. And they were breaded.
Yes.
Totally breaded at Howard Johnson's. Mm-hmm. Saturday was swimming and laughing and jumping in the pool. My mom brought sandwiches for us to eat, Kool-Aid to drink, and we'd get ice cream for dessert. We slept so good those nights. Sunday morning, we'd go to my grandmother's for breakfast, then to church, then home. The Hojo was between our house and my grandmother's place, and we'd pass it all the time year-round. But for one or two weekends in a summer, it was on a different planet. This is so great. We felt happy and special there. Thanks for the memories. That's a great email. That's literature, kids. That's literature. So I'll step on it and read more. From David Collier, not Casey Spink's stern Latin teacher and not yet Dina from Damascus's friend in Severna Park, Maryland. Dear Mr. Tony, I was elated to hear when Connecticut Yankee Chris raved about Buc-ee's to you. This Texas treasure is definitely worth a drop in. What Saliza failed to mention is that due to their meteoric success, or meteoric success, as some people have said, the chain has been expanding eastward. They're now located on our side of the Appalachians, at least in Georgia, outside Atlanta. In fact, I just checked and there now is a Buc-ee's off I-95 in Florence, South Carolina. That's where Eddie and Mindy were, in Florence, South Carolina. So maybe Michael can check it out the next time he heads down to see Chan and Moni. And you must try their specialty, Hot Nuts. Buc-ee's, B-U-C-E-E-S, I think.
Is that how it is spelled?
That's what he says. From Brian Davis in Bethesda, Maryland. I deeply appreciate you and Wilbon speaking about the incredible Cotton Bowl where my Tulane Green Wave of class of 2013 defeated the powerhouse USC Trojans in epic fashion. The game got a little lost in the shadows, rightfully so, because of DeMar Hamlin and Monday Night Football. And then listening to Chris talk about Buc-ee's on Wednesday's pod, I felt compelled to write in. I woke up at 5 a.m. on Monday morning, loaded the car in Austin, Texas, with my wife, brother, and 9-month-old daughter, and drove 3 hours to the Cotton Bowl. Yeah, we were there. About an hour into our drive, we indeed stopped at Buc-ee's, where Chris did not sell it short, a cross between Costco, Sheetz, and Wawa, with great swag, spectacular bathrooms, and food. We then picked up my father, Tulane alumni, as well, at his hotel in Dallas, and was off to watch our school of fine dining and gumbo defeat those guys from USC who actually play football. But I guess Tulane's a football school now. Roll wave. Roll wave. I like that. We got a lovely cartoon from Eric Londergan, which we get all the time, and they're also terrific. I feel I'm forgetting something, and then there's me in the like mouth of a glove.
It looks like a big hamburger helper mitt.
Hamburger helper, is that what
just
it is?
Just hold it up, yes. For News Channel 8.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm doing that now. From Harry Hawkins in Bristol, Connecticut. Some may know the best cheesesteak debate in Philadelphia to center around Pat's and Geno's, but the locals will tell you that the true king is Ish Kabibbles on South Street.
Oh, okay.
Did you not
know? I don't know Ish Kabibbles.
Okay. Not only a superior cheesesteak, but superior thick-cut Spanish-style fries that help mop up the grease and drippings. No contest, I can attest. Eat that steak in Swiss, Saliza. P.S. My parents have a rescue dog named Bella. Here is a non-exhaustive list of things she has eaten over the last 8 years. Tinfoil, a plastic container of hummus, magnesium dietary supplements, a chew toy, pillow feathers, raw deer meat that was certainly lying on the ground longer than whatever ended up in Michael's front yard. Do one more.
Well done, Bella.
Michael Nuttall from Cincinnati. The conversation on Wednesday show about the deer at Michael's house reminded me of when I was 11 and my dad hit a deer with his van out on a state route near our home in rural Ohio. My dad called the highway patrol to get the accident recorded, and at the end, the patrolman asked if he wanted the carcass to take to a butcher. My father answered with a quick, "I wouldn't wish that on any butcher," and explained to me later that when he was a teenager, he worked part-time in a butcher shop in a small town nearby. He said on more than one occasion he was brought a dead deer for butchering after it had been hit by a car with hopes of harvesting any meat possible from it, and he described the enjoyment of the experience as somewhere between getting a root canal and sticking ice picks under my toenails. That all said, you asked if it were possible to harvest meat from deer that had died on your property, and based off my dad's experience, it appears that is the case, though I'm sure knowing the cause of death, like running the deer over with your own vehicle, is an important factor to know when considering whether to eat it or not. Either way, deer meat makes great jerky if you're into dehydrated meat treats. I also have a story of my childhood dog, an overweight beagle named Annie, eating an entire 5-pound bag of fortune cookies, fortunes and all, that I was keeping in my room. But that may need to wait for another day.
The plastic wrap.
Need to wait for another day. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
You shall not pass.
And then.
Thanks for listening, making ties that bind. And thanks for your patience, and thanks for all the good times. If you like what you heard, and you're feeling fine, oh, you could drop a tip right there, if you're so inclined. I'm not here for the money, I'm not here for the show. I know it sounds funny, and it's just about time to go. enjoy the evening, moon shining above. We've all got our reasons, Lord knows. I do it for love. I do it for love. Some came from around here, some came from afar. Some came for the dinner, some came for the bars. Some claim to be family, some claim to be friends. Oh, some have been here for hours, some won't leave even when it ends. I'm not here for the money, I'm not here for the show. I know it sounds funny, and it's just about time to go. Enjoy the evening, moon shining above. We've all got our reasons, Lord knows. I do it for love. I do it for love. For the show, I know it sounds corny, and it's just about time for us to go. Enjoy the evening, moon shining above. We've all got our reasons, Lord knows. I do it for love. Do it for love. Do it for love. Do it for love. Somewhere north of Lynchburg, there's a clearing by the tracks. I left there 40 years ago, no point in looking back. But what said I hear coming, feel it rumble neath the floor. Trains rolling into Monroe, but they don't stop there anymore, because it's gone, it's gone. Yeah, it's gone, solid gone. And they pulled that station down. Now there's nothing to be found, and now it's gone. Well, granddaddy worked the yard crew, third shift for 40 years. His daddy before him, too, it was cold, a sweat and tears. They were men short of stature, they were men of modest means. But they kept the Southern Crescent on time to New Orleans. But now they're gone, they're gone, yeah, they're gone, solid gone. And they pulled that station down, and we buried them in the ground, and now they're gone. Well, the old conductor sits alone, stares with sightless eyes. He hears a distant whistle and he begins to cry. He's thinking about his family and the jobs that went away. And he prays to God each night that they'll be back again someday. But now they're gone, yeah, they're gone, solid gone. And they pulled that station down and the jobs, they all left town and now they're gone. Well, they busted down the roundhouse hall, every brick away. The post office and the hotel where the railroad man would stay. Water tower and the ice house and the Sands and Company store. Well, they not only ate the apple, hell, they gobbled up the core. But now it's gone, it's gone, yeah, it's gone, solid gone. And they pulled that station down and the jobs, they all left town and now it's gone. Forever, there ain't no guarantee except the song of the cicada on a sultry southern breeze. Press your ear against that rail until you hear the music in ya. They gave him his orders at Monroe, Virginia. Now it's gone, yeah, it's gone, solid gone. And they pulled that station down and the jobs, they all left town, yeah, they pulled that station down, now there's no one left around. Yeah, they pulled that station down, now I'm California bound, California bound. And I'm gone, yes I'm gone, clearly gone, nearly gone. Yes, somewhere north of Lynchburg, there's a clearing by the tracks